Hey guys, it's Catherine. I'd like to give a shout out to Boundless listener Kaylin Altman from Wisconsin. She took our online Boundless listener survey to help us make the show better. You can help us out too. Go to boundless.org/survey and tell us what you think. Boundless show.
We got in bed, and I can usually go to sleep in about 10 seconds, and I'm just about 8 seconds into that, and I hear the words, "We need to talk."
Well, that was Dr. Mike Bechtel, who's here this week to help girls decode guys' brains and help guys understand how girls interpret their behavior. This is Lisa Anderson, and welcome to The Boundless Show. This week, great content for you later on coming up for our inbox. We have a question from a girl who is a missionary, and that vocation seems to intimidate and scare guys away. And she's wondering, does she have hope for dating and possibly marrying, or has she pretty much sealed her own fate? All right. Well, here we are for our roundtable, speaking of sealing your fate, in maybe a less serious way, but we have got Jake, Catherine, and Matt here. Hi, guys.
Hey.
What it be?
All right. We're going to talk today. You know, you guys are our regulars on the show. We're going to actually talk about clothing today as it relates to dating and dressing to impress, dressing so as not to impress, dressing so as to not look like you're trying too hard. I don't know. What do guys and girls expect and or like when it comes to the opposite sex and the way that they dress and present themselves? So I see everyone is just really working their own style here today. So that's good.
Yes.
Catherine's rocking the sweater set. That's good. I have leggings and a dress on because that's the only thing I can wear with my surgical boot that is still on my leg, people.
Let's not
even
get into
that.
It looks like you're wearing a sweater as well.
I have a sweater because it's so freezing down here all the time.
She's actually very well.
I know, but I don't
know how she skirted that. It's like, Catherine, sweater set. Me,
no.
I've got these leggings
on. Catherine's got like a cardigan
on. That's
Catherine's got like the cardigan, the demure little cardigan going on.
Okay, look, we have this family friend who loves sweaters and buys me like, I have like 10 of these in different colors.
Okay.
I'm just being resourceful.
Have you ever worn one of them on a date?
No.
Oh. Okay, well then we're going to have to talk about what
just to work.
Work clothes.
Oh, those are work
they
clothes.
They are, yeah.
Are you dressing to unimpress them? Is that what's
I'm
happening?
I'm dressing for functionality, I think.
Okay.
Is that a word?
Okay. That's a great word.
Thank
dressing
you.
For function.
Yeah,
that's like one of my main words.
Okay, so this is interesting because we actually had some of our listeners weigh in on this, okay? So there are some questions that they want answered. But first up, let's just give some general impressions. When you think of this topic, you know, Jake, you need to reach back to the former days when you were a football star and were dating and all that kind of stuff. Let's just talk generally about what, when you even think of this topic, what comes to mind? Is this something you even think about if you're going to go out with someone? Or do you notice how people dress? Are you choosing to go out with someone or not go out with them based on how they present themselves and their appearance? What do you think?
I mean, I'm grateful that my now wife that wasn't her highest value because she actually ended up buying me a lot of clothes. In fact, the first gift she ever got me before we started dating was a shirt from American Eagle. Because you know what? She was fine with the hoodies that I wore constantly.
And the blazers over them.
But, you know, she was like, you gotta expand the wardrobe here.
Okay.
And so she would always be buying me t-shirts and sweater. I can't even tell you what they're called because I just personally didn't care.
Yeah.
But she would buy me clothes all the time to kind of doll me up. And I was like, cool, free stuff.
Okay. So were you weren't necessarily like wardrobe challenged. You were just kind of wore the same thing all the time. Like what you wore, it worked for you. It wasn't weird. It's just you didn't have a lot of variety.
Yeah, you know, I was homeschooled for years, and so I didn't have to worry about it a whole lot. It was kind of I could wear whatever I wanted. And then even when I did go to school, I played basketball, I played football, I was lifting and doing sports almost every single day. And so shorts and sweats and hoodies and t-shirts were the order of the day. It was comfortable. It was easy to get in and out of when I needed to get my athletic gear on. And so that was about the extent of what I thought about my fashion.
Okay. Catherine, what do you think about guys in fashion?
Well, I honestly don't think about it much when it comes to dating. But when I started, before we started recording, and when I started really thinking about my experiences dating, I realized that what I've worn has played a part sometimes. And I was kind of surprised because I don't really think about. I'm not huge into fashion at all. I feel like I'm not great at it. I kind of just wear what people like give me.
It's frugal.
I'll second that as well. Yeah.
Right,
I'm
going
to be rich one day because of all the clothes I've not bought.
But I do feel like, and something the listeners pointed out was that it kind of reveals something about the person. And so I do use it as a way to gauge people. You know, because if I feel like a guy cares too much about what he looks like, it's a big turnoff. Like, it's like, okay, mm-hmm. like, I don't care that much. You shouldn't either. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I don't really notice, but I do think it's a bigger factor in dating than I thought.
Okay.
Well, and I could pull off the sweats in high school because everybody knew I was the quarterback. Everybody knew I was playing basketball. That was the aesthetic. But if I was still like that and trying to date now in my late 20s, mm-hmm. that would be, I can see how that would be a problem. This
Everybody
guy only ever wears
sweats.
Yeah, sweats he's just guy. A bum. He's in his parents' basement playing video games all the time. Hmm. I think we do, although I think it can be overblown, to your point, we can overdo it. At the same time, we are communicating something by what we wear.
Right, yeah, right.
Definitely.
Okay.
And that's kind of something I look for. This is weird. In a girl, but... It's like it's an extension of the personality. I remember being on a trip in an airport with the girl that I'm dating now, actually, and another guy. And I asked her about her shirt, and I asked her if she'd ever seen Seinfeld. You know, the poofy shirt gag?
The pirate shirt, yeah.
And she had this billowy shirt on. And I don't know if this is weird or not.
Did you
but
like it?
No.
Oh.
This is like a consistent thing that I see, like, I don't like wearing really billowy, loose-fitting clothing, especially shirts. It doesn't make sense to me. It feels weird, and I don't like it.
But the key is that you noticed it, right?
Right.
Okay,
I always notice this type of shirt. It's weird.
Okay.
I don't know why.
So it's like a trigger for you.
A key for me, something that has worked for me that I didn't even mean to do, is if you wear something unique, people notice. But like, it has to be kind of like normal, but like slightly off. I have these red cowboy boots that I just got because I love cowboy boots and red. But, like, people notice them. I was at a coffee shop the other day, and this guy was like, hey, I like your boots. But then he was like, my wife would like them, too. And I was like, okay, that wasn't...
That was a good clarification on his part, though.
But why else would that guy have talked to me in a coffee shop? Like, I feel like you have to wear something kind of unique, and it makes people remember you.
Uh-huh. That is so funny, though, because when you just said that, like, if I were a guy or the equivalent of that, like, if a guy were doing that, I would be like, oh, we're clearly not compatible because I don't like anything about country, anything including music or whatever. So I would just completely like shut someone
down.
It's
good. It's like natural selection, though, you know? Like,
is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So like another great example for me would be I'm not really like, you know, you were talking about showcasing something from your personality. Mm-hmm. I am not about people that have shirts for every TV show they love, every like one of their hobbies, every superhero they're in. You know, guys that have every Star Wars shirt just says to me, weirdo. That's like weird.
So it's if they wear it at all, or just if you find out that they have a collection?
Because like,
I have, asking for a friend.
If they have like a big collection.
Because I need to know. I have this Minecraft / Marvel superhero shirt that's fantastic. But yeah. would that, if I had to go back into the dating pool,
I'm not talking
good.
About one shirt. I'm talking about like if you can't go to a concert of a band you like without buying their shirt and having like the latest iteration of every one of their album swag and stuff, I just think that's weird.
But see, I don't care. I think it just totally depends on the girl. Like, I wouldn't mind.
Yeah, what if you're the girl who sees that guy doing that and says, man, I love music too.
Right,
I love
right.
supporting local bands. This is great. Let's go to a concert together.
Yeah, I think what we're kind of weeding out here is that sometimes the clothes we wear say something about us, or the way we perceive other people's clothes are kind of one of those first boxes we use to group people.
Right.
And so if you see somebody, then you get this vibe that, oh, man, they've got a Rush T-shirt on. They probably went to the anniversary show and this is not the guy for me.
And
that's a quick way to, you know.
If a guy hates country and my red boots, I don't want him to talk to me anyway. Like, I'm like, well, then we're probably not going to get... I mean, we might get along, but...
Well,
then,
only
I would
as
say,
acquaintances, because I hate country music.
So I would
and
say, getting
boots.
Back to the T-shirt situation, this is where I liked what Lindsay had to say to us, and that was, she said, I mostly just care if the guy is dressed appropriately for the occasion.
Right.
So
right.
that's mm-hmm. where it's like... I mean, I remember my brother-in-law going to the rehearsal dinner for my sister's wedding, and he wore like a T-shirt that was like that fake tux, you know, because she wanted everyone to dress up and he thought he would be super clever. But it was like a really fancy restaurant and he just ended up looking ghetto and weird. So, you know, it's kind of like you need to know. You don't want to. I mean, it's sad because there are some folks that just don't know how to try, but then there are other people that kind of try too hard.
Right.
I've seen that too. I mean, I'll never forget when Joshua Rogers answered one of our inbox questions and was speaking to the guy who was so desperate to like get this girl to go out with him. And he was showing up at church in like a 3-piece suit and a fedora and just way trying to be the 40s suave. And she was completely freaked out by him.
So you can be overdressed.
You can be overdressed.
When I was in college,
it's really creepy.
There was this guy that was interested in me who wore suits like all the time. And it was just weird. Like to dinner at my parents' house and like we're in our country cowboy boots. I'm like, I don't think you fit in with my family, which is fine. Some girls like that, you know, but like not me.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because it reminds me of, you know, and I know, okay, so Phil Joel, formerly of the Newsboys, he has been on the show. He found his wife at a radio station, whatever. But he wore like bright orange pants that I think had flowers on them. And he used to be a hairstylist, so his hair is always perfectly coiffed. I would not go out with him unless I mean, that just is like so weird to me. You know, guys that are like almost too cool, like they're just at thrift shops buying these super like crazy vintage kind of things.
That's why you don't like my blazer hoodie look, because it's thrift shop.
Yeah. No, that's okay, because you don't have like 20 of them that you like mix and match. Like, the guys that are just too hipster.
Thrift shop, though.
But I feel like there has to be a balance between if someone's wearing something that bothers you, knowing that you're probably not going to get along, but also not discounting someone for wearing something weird when they could be a great person.
Well,
you know what I mean?
For sure.
That's a great point. So I'm going to circle back to the poofy shirt thing.
Right.
Because it's embarrassing.
The pirate shirt.
I brought it up to this wonderful girl who I'm dating
this can't
now.
Be going anywhere good.
I genuinely insulted her by like bringing it up. I was like, hey, that's kind of like, what do you call that style? And she was like, I don't know. I was like, would you call it poofy? And she didn't like that. And the other guy is like, dude, stop. And I was like, no, I'm just saying, like, it doesn't seem like you because you're really practical and really, really cool. And this shirt seems like really.
Okay, this was on first
she's still
date. Yeah, it was
you?
The shovel motion. Yeah. I'm getting it now and I got it then.
Wait, this was a first date?
No, this is just we were on a trip together with some people.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But it worked. They're dating now.
It was
so.
No, it was actually
yourself?
An ugly moment. Like, we've talked about it a number of times since then.
You've got to be careful when we start commenting on wardrobe stuff, because that's always a tricky balance.
True.
Because similarly, when my wife and I were dating, she got a new haircut. You know, she had a couple of different hairstyles. She got a new haircut, and it was my first time seeing it, and she had told me she was getting a cut, and she comes walking downstairs, and I'm like, oh, you look like you're a character in, like, an anime TV show.
Oh no!
That really upset her. I didn't dislike it, but
well, I guess some girls would like
me comparing it to that was not what she was going for.
And what did you mean by that?
I just was like, oh, that's the style it reminds me of, and I got myself in a lot of hot water. I dug a pretty good pit for myself.
Is this a uniquely guy problem, or do girls do this too?
Do what?
Like comment on the attire of the other person, and just unintentionally insult them or something.
I mean, girls will rarely say anything.
Okay.
I mean, we'll go back home and talk to our friends about it or whatever, but we're not going to confront the guy about like, hey, what are you?
The problem I've seen like in the other direction was if she told me that she liked the way something looked, then sort of subconsciously, I found it went to a point where one time she said, oh, I really like when you wear a hoodie and a ball cap. It looks good on you. And then about 2-3 weeks later, she was like, you know what? I said that I didn't mean you only should wear hoodies and ball caps, because subconsciously I was only wearing hoodies
That's
and
really
ball caps.
Funny.
I was like, I found the formula. This is what I'm
that
sticking
is
with.
Something, guys listening, like if you comment on something a girl wears, like usually that's a big compliment. Even girls like me who don't care that much about clothes, like I'll remember it. If someone says like, oh man, you're like, that dress is nice. But you have to be careful.
Don't compare it to something else. Just say it looks
right.
good. Like if I would have said, your haircut looks really great. I like it. All
right.
would have been
See,
well.
That's nice.
But because I tried to compare it to something, I got myself in hot water.
Yeah, but yeah. And it can't be a creepy compliment either. Like,
mm-hmm. I had, like, what about stuff? I mean, we've kind of touched on this a little bit, but stuff that you just flat out do not like. So I dated a guy for a while who had, he was really into Vans, and he actually had a pair of Vans that had.
I thought you meant like the car.
No,
he had this old Subaru van. It was crazy.
Sorry,
was
Vans,
Vans
the brand.
The shoe.
Okay, gotcha.
And, but they had like bumblebees on them. And I'm like, that was like way too effeminate. I was just like, why would you choose Vans that have bumblebees on them? I just think that's
so
weird.
Did you say something?
What was his reasoning?
No, I don't know. He just liked him or whatever. But see, then, but I kind of made a concession for that because everything else he wore was very, he was a very snappy dresser. And so he was really well put together and generally did dress well for the occasion. But I knew that if the relationship like went the distance, I would probably be addressing the bumblebees. So,
and that seems like a minor thing to address
right,
later on down the road where it's like, hey, is there a story behind those shoes or something?
That's true.
And yeah. I feel like I would admire somebody who had the confidence to wear something they liked, even if it was weird.
Yeah, like I think when it's a piece of an outfit, it feels different than when they're just wearing something like they're just crazy overall. Because they got the fanny pack and the Chubbs and a blazer and a tank top underneath
Chubbs
that. Chubbs are shorts that are popular in the southern hemisphere.
I've only heard them called Chubbies.
Chubbies, yeah. Chubbies. I've heard them. I've heard them called both. You know, it depends on where you're at. If you're New Zealand or Australia, I think.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
If the whole thing is that way, that seems to be one problem versus, yeah, if they've just got a pair of shoes or a belt or, you know, that one piece of flair in their outfit, I feel like that can be tasteful.
Yeah. Okay.
But what we haven't talked about makeup at all.
Well, yeah, I was going to actually ask you guys, like, when is a woman going overboard? Like, can a woman be just too dressed up, too flashy, too unapproachable because either she's wearing expensive stuff or a lot of makeup or because I always hear, I mean, I don't know if this is just Colorado or what, but just I just like a girl who likes to hang out with her golden retriever and just be all chill and whatever, you know, like the mountain girl, whatever. And then I'm like, OK, so does everyone have to be a mountain girl? Is that all guys here like? What about that?
That's probably a Colorado stereotype. There's a reason guys move to
but
be close to the mountains
here, yeah.
And want a mountain girl.
And the assumption is that if she's like, you know, wearing a marmot jacket, she likes to ice climb. I mean, it's, you know.
You guys can tell me if I'm wrong, but like being comfortable, isn't that more important than anything else? I mean, I just know like in college, I was going to the slip and slide event and I wore like really old t-shirt and shorts because I was going to slip and slide like with everybody. And one of my friends was like sitting on the bench the whole time because she was like, I don't want to get my clothes dirty. And like one of the guys at the event was like expressing interest in me. And I always kind of wondered, like, I looked terrible, but I was participating. So like, I feel like maybe guys care more about that than the actual clothes.
I think, again, I think if you're, as long as you're not on the extremes, there's a lot of middle ground, I think, that we're good with if it's situationally appropriate. So, yeah, if you show up to a slip and slide event and you're in a dress or a skirt and your hair is well coiffed and all your jewelry's on, that says something about your situational awareness and about like the way you participate in fun events. That to a lot of guys, maybe not 100% of guys, maybe there's a guy that doesn't want to participate too, but to all the guys that want to be there and participate in the event, they're looking for somebody to jump in and do this thing with them. Ultimately, when we're looking for a partner, for a spouse, we're looking for somebody that wants to do life with us. And does their wardrobe match that?
Yeah, I think the situational awareness term you just used there is really, it's really big for me. I feel like it's big for a lot of people probably. But, I know there's just an example. When my brother was dating his wife, I was a kid at the time. He's much older than me. And she came out to our house in Michigan. It was winter time. It was like right in the edge of winter. And it was cold. And we were walking through the woods at one point because he had to go get a deer stand that he had in a tree out there and take it to another place. And it was a very, very Michigan scenario to me. Very backwoods kind of Michigan. But she's there. And she's actually dressed in like good clothes aside from her shoes. Her shoes are just like tennis shoes. When I say good clothes, I mean like outdoors clothes, like warm, fitting the environment. And we're just tromping through like ice cold water and slush and just walking for kind of miles through these woods. And she's freezing at this point. But she was super cool with it. She was really, didn't complain at all. I think she just turned to me, like the one thing she said, she turned to me, the kid with them, just tromping around behind like my brother and his girlfriend. She said, "Hey Matt, if you ever date a girl, don't do this to her."
Oh.
And that was it. But she was not complaining.
It was playful.
And her actions said a lot more than her attire there too. Mm-hmm. So that was a factor as well.
I feel like I would love for our international listeners to comment because I feel like there's overall kind of a general American problem to dressing well too. Like when I was in Europe, my European friends were like, we would never wear tennis shoes out. Like you wear them at the gym, like athletic shoes. You do not go shopping in them. You don't, or in sweats, or like when my friend Barbara was like, why do Americans always have to have stuff emblazoned across their chests? Like, why are they always a billboard for some brand or for, you know, you're like from Colorado and you're wearing Colorado t-shirts. Like what, like why are you
What's
just
the deal?
Advertising? No, we always have to be. And it is so true. And you see those people that are like, they show up and they're in like jeans and their white tennies and the fanny pack, you know, that's taking a little too far, the fanny pack, but the hooded sweatshirt that is like some college or some vacation destination or whatever. And it is kind of, you know, and it, I mean, okay, maybe if you're like going to go hiking or go doing whatever, but you know, for like dinner or something, I would be, unless you're gonna, you know, be at Carl's Jr. or something, I wouldn't maybe recommend that. I don't know, it just seems like it's kind of a thing that's unique to Americans. So,
well, I think it's very like regional even in America.
Yeah,
because there's plenty of places where, and even we could even say generationally, where in the South, let's say, you know, when you're inviting, more often than not, I'm not saying it's all over the South, but when you invite somebody over for Sunday dinner, there's an expectation of the way you're dressed for Sunday dinner and the way you serve things and the way you are presenting yourself in the South is different than it is in the Midwest than it is on the East Coast. So I think there's regional differences, like we talked about, the Colorado people wanting their mountainous bows and paramours and all that.
But I think be who you are. If you're not a mountain person, don't pretend. I mean,
you don't have to, because you don't necessarily have to fit the
dating
region.
Dating would be exhausting if you're always just trying to fit, the people around you and dress how they want you to. Even if it takes a while to find someone, I think you should be yourself and then wait until you find someone that likes you.
Yeah. But I don't think it's wrong to take advice from people as to what looks good on you and what doesn't and what might work, you know, even
right,
if it's
exactly.
just straight up like before a date, how does this look? Do you think this is okay? Does it look like I'm trying too hard? And just have someone objectively assess you, not your grandma, but someone who's maybe a peer.
Yeah, there's I think it's a framework more than rules. Mm-hmm. Like be situationally aware. Don't be over the top. But at the same time, don't try to pretend to be something you're not.
Yeah, very true. Good thoughts, you guys. All right. Hopefully we'll continue the conversation over on the blog. You guys weigh in and let us know what you think. Have you ever shown up on a date and just been like, fashion miss, either for yourself or the other person? Tell us about it and we'll see you. Yeah, good thoughts, guys.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. You make me so mad. I want to throw a stone. You make me so sad. I want to hide away alone. Can you meet me?
Well, hey, everyone. For this week's culture segment, we get to welcome back a friend to the Boundless Show, Mike Bechtel. Mike, welcome.
Thanks. Hey. Always good to be here.
Well, we were just talking about how you're one of our newest podcast fans.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Well, tell us why you are learning about being single when you're basically not single right now.
You're right.
Yeah.
No, I listened when I was on here last time. I hadn't heard the program before and just had fun with this and listening to your style and what you're trying to accomplish with your audience, and I thought, okay, it sounds really good. So I signed up for the podcast and been listening ever since.
Well, we appreciate it, and we're going to let you listen even though you're married. So
okay. Yeah, I haven't asked my wife for permission, but I think she'll be okay.
she'll start listening with you. It'll be good. Well, folks, you may remember our past interview with Mike because it was on his book. I can't say the title. I have to sing it. People can't drive you crazy if you don't give them the keys. I said it's like a country song.
That was so awesome.
I know. Isn't it? It is literally, it reads like a country song. So I have to always sing it every time I think of it. And, you know, as I said before, it could be my autobiography. So, but you have another fun titled book that we're going to talk about today. And this is like all the women are going to collectively like lean in when they hear this. Because it is, I wish he had come with instructions, The Woman's Guide to a Man's Brain. Now, I'm quite shocked that this book is only, let's see what, a little over 200 pages, because surely you can't say that the body of all knowledge of a man's brain, well, maybe you're going to say that that could have been a shorter book. I don't know. The woman's brain, maybe that's a multi-volume situation. We'll see. We'll do that interview next. But these are good insights. And I mean, I think this could be married, single. This is just understanding the opposite sex.
Right.
And you are a man, so hopefully you know what you're talking about.
Well, that's one of the reasons I wrote it, was because I looked to see what had been written about women understanding men. And there was a bunch of them, but they were all written by women.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, that's a little strange because they've never been inside.
Right.
And I have. Right. And I thought, I certainly, my wife warned me. She said, don't ever give advice because you can't tell a woman what to do because you've never been there. So she said, make it a book of understanding because I've been in there a long time. And so I'll take you on a tour and show you the high points and the scenic vistas and the toxic waste and just kind of walk alongside.
Well, that's good. And we do want to add kind of in this, we're this conversation, I think you would agree, we are talking to guys who are generally healthy, who just want to understand women.
Mm-hmm.
This is not, you guys out there, you know, hopefully you know who you are. You probably don't. But if you're just messed up and you need to like figure out some stuff about yourself first and just get some things in line, that's a whole other conversation. And we have dealt with unhealthiness in relationships and stuff like that on the show before. But this is kind of like that guy who's just, you know, kind of growing in maturity, loves the Lord, whatever, but just is still scratching his head.
But
when
he's okay.
He's okay. He's trying to figure things out. Okay, so first off, here's what I want to kind of parse out a little bit, Mike. You actually talk about men and women communicating with one another, and you liken it to a cross-cultural communication situation. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, maybe an example of that, because that seems kind of vast, but I think anyone who's had this experience would say, yeah, it kind of is. I really felt misunderstood, or I really felt, why is there such a divide? What are the actual, you know, contributors to that?
Well, I think the biggest contributor is physiological, that there actually is a difference in the way men think and the way women think.
Okay.
I think
that's
something
good to know. Then we don't have to blame and be
because I mean, if it goes back to cross-cultural, it's like if you speak only Spanish and I speak only English, I can be as clear as I want. And I'm wondering, why don't you get it?
Yeah.
I'm being perfectly clear, but you don't speak that language. So if we can understand that, and I think the biggest thing with the brain is that there's two parts, and one part is called gray matter and one's called white matter. And the gray matter is where we focus. So when you're using gray matter, it's like you look at something, you can focus on it, make decisions around that.
Hmm.
The white matter is the connective tissue that connects everything to everything.
Okay.
Men have about 6 times more gray matter than women do.
Huh.
Women have 10 times more of that connective tissue. So men look at one thing, focus and move on. Women connect everything to everything. And so it's like two different languages, and you wonder, why can't they understand me? But I think understanding stuff like that, it's like taking basic language classes, because you're learning what really is different and then accepting that and working with it.
And it seems like so often women excel kind of in nuance and kind of, you know, they're going to say something pretty vague or pretty, you know, talk around a subject. And if we're doing that with other women, we totally understand one another. And like we can go deep really fast. We can talk around an issue and everyone's like, oh, yeah, you know, that's how she is. You're saying guys need a little bit more of a direct route. And I think you gave an example in the book about a girl talking about dinner. The girl says, want to get something to eat, which means she actually wants to go. That's kind of her vague way of putting it out there, like, hey, maybe let's go do something. And the guy's just like, nah, not really.
Yeah.
End of discussion.
He thought it was a question.
Yeah. Yeah.
And but that with that nuance, she's implying that she wanted to go, but he heard it as a question. And so he says, not really. Mm-hmm. And then she's upset because he didn't take her needs into consideration. And he's wondering why he's in trouble. And it goes both directions.
Mm-hmm.
But if we don't take into consideration really how they think, and I think explore beyond just those kind of things, it needs to be really direct.
Yeah. Now, you're a communications guy. And you're saying that even in your own marriage, it took you a few weeks into marriage to really learn kind of some lessons about this. Are you saying the whole process of dating, you kind of thought you and your wife were on the same page? What did you learn?
Oh, yeah.
Because each of you were just talking individually. Okay. What did you actually learn? What was an aha moment? Or maybe you can even give a couple examples within your marriage of how oh my goodness, this is where the rubber hits the road, and my wife and I are really different.
Well, I think one of the simplest ones was we'd been married maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and my wife is a night person. I'm a morning person. Hmm. So typically I wake up about 5 a.m. and I'm wide awake. 9 o'clock at night, I can't form multisyllable words or walk upright. She's just the opposite. So we got in bed, and I can usually go to sleep in about 10 seconds, and I'm just about 8 seconds into that, and I hear the words, we need to talk.
Oh, no.
And I'm going, wait. No, and then I think, okay, I want to be a good husband, so I need to listen. And I'm thinking, just don't fall asleep. Don't fall asleep. And she had something she'd been saving all day, and I did my best, but she didn't understand why I wasn't able to participate as much. And we finally had to realize we are different. Mm-hmm. And when we talked about it, I think that's what happens. It's not in the moment, but later on, to be able to talk about it and explore each other's perspectives. It's like, okay, we can appreciate that.
Yeah, that's good. You actually have one section of the book that I thought was really fun. In fact, I'm going to turn to it here. It's a little primer on how to actually speak male. And you give some examples, which I found would have been extremely helpful in a couple of my dating relationships, because my MO was, I'm a really interesting person, so I'm just going to keep talking. And the more I talk, the more interesting he's going to discover I am. And clearly, through some of your instructions here, that was probably not the direction I should have gone. In fact, I remember telling a friend after going on a particular date kind of how the conversation went. And she's like, did you really like say all that? And I was like, well, yeah, because it like one thing led to another. And then she's like, did you give him the opportunity to ask anything of you, or did you just volunteer? And I'm like, well, why not just volunteer? Because surely that just makes it easier for him. Meanwhile, clearly he was flatlining, and that relationship didn't go anywhere. So, lesson learned. Anyway, you kind of have how to speak male. You have a part one and a part two on this. Can you give us a couple examples of this that you think are so, like, just cookie cutter across the board, biggest, you know, transgressors help the women out, figure out what we actually need to have on our radar when we're having a conversation of any kind with a guy.
You know, I think one of the simplest ones goes back to how the man thinks, that part of his brain. Mm-hmm. He does think about one thing and then he moves to something else. So if a woman is trying to explain something and goes into a lot of different tangents and a lot of detail, he'll glaze over. Mm-hmm. And it's not because he doesn't care. It's like he's still in that first category and he doesn't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
And sometimes he really does want to in fact, in most cases, he probably does want to communicate, but he really doesn't know where to go because there's so many different moving pieces. So I think one of the simplest things is take the first area, talk about it, land on it, explore it. Mm-hmm. And then once you've gotten through that, add a piece and go from there. And I think another one that goes right along with that, my wife and I can go out to dinner with friends. I can have lunch with a friend. She can have lunch with a friend. We'll come home and I say, how did your lunch go? And she says, sentence by sentence, what the lunch was. She said, well, I said this, and then she said this, and she followed up with this, and sometimes I think her explanation takes longer than the lunch did. Yeah. But then she asked
me. And it makes you not even want to ask.
Well, yeah. and I'm trying to be polite, but mm-hmm. She just goes on and on. Mm-hmm. And I'm not bored. It's too much to absorb and process. That's the problem.
Yeah.
And then she'll ask me, how did your lunch go? And I say, it was good. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, what'd you talk about? I said, stuff. And she thinks, but what about this? And how could you have talked to him this long and you don't remember? It's like, but I was engaged in the conversation. And when that was done, we moved to something else and that was left behind. And I can come home and I have no idea what we talked about, but we had a really good time.
Yeah.
So understanding the differences, and I think just allowing for that, that's where it starts getting, and to be able to talk about those differences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you feel when we're talking like this?
Yeah. In your section two, I appreciate what you say here about you give the advice to summarize as well, which kind of could be applied to that situation. It reminds me of a former boss I had who, like, you pretty much knew you had about 10 seconds to get to the point when you had a meeting with him. Otherwise, his eyes glazed over and he was off on something else. And so it was kind of that, like, you know, I felt like people on our team were preparing their little speeches and memorizing them beforehand. Otherwise, they wouldn't get anywhere with them. But that is a good rule of thumb, because if you start in, okay, well, do you remember 3 weeks ago when we were in that meeting? And it's like, yeah, I'm done. Which is funny because I'm actually a pretty, I stay away from tangents for the most part. I'm pretty direct, but I could absolutely see that. And I always think of him of just, oh my word, summarize, get to the main points, see what, you know, where it's going and whatever.
You know, I had a boss just like that. Mm-hmm. It was the same thing. And I used to send him, actually it was when we used voicemail more often. I'd send him a long voicemail with all the details and he wouldn't get back with me. And I say, why didn't you get back with me? He said it was too long. I erased it. And so even in emails, I had to give him subject lines only, tell him what I want, no detail. Mm-hmm. And that's how he operated.
Yeah. So here's one also that you bring up that I think could tread into the not only just misunderstanding, but actually attributing motives and kind of, you know, some bad intention. You talk about not bringing up situations from the past, which women are very good at doing because we've got a catalog in our heads of everything from the last 15-ish years that was done against us and or, and it may be used against you if you tread into that space. So how... First of all, I didn't even realize that guys don't have that catalog. I didn't realize that. And you're saying they truly don't. And to go and kind of use that against someone is ultimately going to backfire on you.
Yeah, because when there's conflict and we're going through things, if we can keep it current, that's going to keep a man engaged. If we go back to the past, it feels unfair.
Yeah,
it's like, wait, I thought we talked about that or that was in the past. And so to bring it back in to the discussion, it's like, wait, that's using extra ammunition that shouldn't be there. We have a current issue. Let's talk about this current issue. And that's it.
Okay. So men, you also talk in the book about men when they just stop talking. And that drives women crazy. Mm-hmm. What is the reason or a couple reasons men do that? And how can women kind of be on the lookout for that and help avoid just complete shutdowns or stonewalling?
No, that's great. Because, and it goes back a little bit about what we talked earlier, because if a man shuts down, most of the time it isn't because he doesn't care. Most of the time I've found he really does care, but he doesn't know what to say. And part of it is because she's covering so much ground that he doesn't know how to respond with it. And plus, he may have tried to respond before and then she shoots back at him. He gets defensive. Mm-hmm. And so to let him talk and just listen and go a little slower with some of those kind of things. But I think that's where it can become toxic if he gets quiet and he just withdraws. It's not because he doesn't want to say something. He may not he may not know what to do. Mm-hmm. It's important. And on the man's side, he needs to know that sometimes he needs time. He needs a little bit of space. Too often, he'll just get up and leave. Mm-hmm. And that's the worst thing he can do. But it's okay for him to go away as long as he tells her, I'll be back. Mm-hmm. Okay, I need some time right now because I'm feeling angry. I'm feeling frustrated. Let me go process a little bit. I will be back. I'm not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. And to have those kind of dialogues.
Yeah.
So nobody's wondering, is he just shutting this off or what?
Yeah. It's interesting. A few months ago, we had one of our bloggers blog about this phenomenon, because he's newly married, about having conversations with his wife and his wife wanting to just kind of process or emote about something in her day. And immediately he's like, well, here's what you need to do. Yeah. Kind of the fix it, you know. And he actually shared in the body of the post a YouTube video where this wife is talking to her husband. She's got a nail sticking out of her head. It's called It's Not About the Nail.
Right.
And he's like, no, really, you have a nail? And she's like, no, I'm just saying there's like pressure there. And there's like my sweaters are getting snagged and whatever. But it's not, you know, stop trying to fix it. Stop trying to. Where does that fix it mentality come from? And how can women learn to appreciate that in a man when truly they do have good solutions, but also feel like they're being heard?
Well, I think it goes back to the fact that men focus on one thing at a time. Before they move on, they want completion. So it's like, I need to solve this and then I can move on to something else and we'll solve that. Mm-hmm. And it was tough when my wife and I first got married, or even when we were dating, we ran into that where she would bring up something she's going through and she did it so that she could share it and we could just connect. Mm-hmm. And I assumed that the reason she was bringing it up was so that I could give her a solution. And so I would give her a logical solution, do A and B, you'll get C. And I discovered she wasn't quite that interested in the solution. And so I realized it was the listening part, which is probably, I think, the key to any relationship. If we could learn how to do what I call power listening, that's probably the biggest gap in most relationships, even in dating relationships or even in friendships. It's like we want to talk and express our position, and that gets in the way of exactly that when we don't.
Yeah. Okay, so you mentioned a dating relationship, so I do want to bring this up because I think there are a lot of women who one of the aspects of fear in a relationship is, well, how do I know I'm getting a good guy? How do I know I'm getting a guy who's going to put in the work, who's going to really love me and appreciate me and kind of go the distance, meet me halfway or whatever? So how can a woman in communication, Mike, know the difference between this is a guy, male processing, this is just how he is, versus this guy has some bona fide communicating issues that could present some problems in a relationship and ultimately in marriage and probably need to be at least yellow flagged versus this guy's really a jerk and I shouldn't be putting up with this kind of communication behavior.
Besides checking his police record?
Okay. Background checks. Yeah. Yes. Well, provided they've already done that.
And I think that's realistic because the key is that sometimes we're attracted to people because of our similarities, mm-hmm. common ground. And you see all the good. You haven't seen any bad. The longer any couple or any person and people, period, together, the longer they're together, the more you start seeing some of the differences. It's like, wait, that's not quite what I thought. But we assume that it's a fluke. It's like, mm-hmm. that's not who they are. Well, this time they're just tired or something else. And we start seeing it. And then we don't address it. And it's not pointing out the finger and saying, you need to fix this. Mm-hmm. But it's like, you know, it was a little uncomfortable when this just happened. Can we talk through that?
Yeah.
Dealing with it when it's little.
Yeah, that's good. So kind of as we round out here, Mike, let's talk to the guys now. We're trying to give the women a lot of insight on, okay, understanding, being on the receiving end of this. How do we process? But talk to the guys. What can they do to help girls understand them better? What's their best foot forward? Because they might have that girl that they want to be in a relationship with, and she's just like, either he's not communicating or not knowing what to say or whatever. What can guys do to kind of make the effort?
Yeah, I think a little bit of it is education, mm-hmm. knowing how a woman thinks, how a girl thinks, and even some of the stuff we've talked about. Things like the physiology, she does think differently. It's not that she needs to be healed. Mm-hmm. It's just she thinks differently. And to say, man, I wish he wasn't that way. The problem is guys get together. They don't talk about girls as much as they might think. They'll mention it, but they move right on to something else. Mm-hmm. But there is that idea that, I don't know, do you understand her, your girlfriend? I'd say, well, no, because she did this. I don't know. And then they move on. But there's that kind of a camaraderie. We don't get it. They're all this way. And so to challenge that, for mm-hmm. a man to challenge that paradigm and say, you know what? Let me explore. I want to study this girl mm-hmm. because she's worth it. Mm-hmm. And to be able to find out how does she think? What's different about the way they process? Mm-hmm. If I can learn that, then I can learn to not try and change it. It's like, let's bring in those differences because that's where the strength of a relationship comes from.
Yeah. So how, kind of flipping that on its side, another point for the women, what would you say? I know a lot of women who are like, well, I don't even know if this guy's legit, like spiritually, because in their head, it's like he should be sharing his favorite Bible verse every day. He should be like talking about all the emotions around his faith in God. He should be like wanting to, you know, deconstruct 3 or 4 different preacher podcasts. And she's just like, yeah, please lead me in a devotional every like 4th hour or whatever. And he's like, what? What? Looking at that, knowing the communication differences, what do we look for a spiritually solid guy who can put himself out there, can communicate, but doesn't have to do it in the way women are expecting?
I think when people are dating, we tend to put on our best front. And it's only over time that we start seeing some of those things. Mm-hmm. And somebody can do all the right things and they can do the spiritual things for a period of time. But the longer you get to know them, the more you realize they're going to slip back into their default setting, whatever that is. So I think the biggest thing is not to rush into things. There's a real reason for having a longer courtship, for a longer part of that relationship, is to be able to watch them when they're not just performing mm-hmm. and let it get real so that the default's going to come out. Who you are is going to start leaking out over time.
Yeah.
And the spiritual side of it, it's not saying, do they lead the Bible studies? Do they do this? It's like, watch them mm-hmm. and see what does that look like? How does God play out in their life, or does he? Mm-hmm. If it's real, it's going to leak.
Yeah, good. Integrity, character, yeah. All of those things. How do they respond? Awesome. Okay, folks, the book is I Wish He Had Come With Instructions, The Woman's Guide to a Man's Brain. We've been talking to Mike Bechtel, a friend of Boundless, and thank you so much for this insight. This has been fabulous.
Always
so,
fun.
Ladies, represent. Hop over to the blog, and you can let us know what you think, and basically start putting some of this stuff into practice, and then tell us, hey, are you having better conversations with these guys, better communication? And, you know, let them fix something in your life once in a while. For Pete's sake, you don't have to be all defensive about it. So thanks, Mike.
You bet. In a love that makes all things new. Hey, make a little trouble. It's all good, I got you. Believe in a love that makes all things new. Hey, make a little trouble. I know it might exhaust you, but believe in a love that makes all things new. Hey, make a little trouble for something bigger than you. And believe in a love that makes all things new. Hey, when the world needs a
well, as we finish out the show, we are opening up our inbox and I get to answer today's question from one of our female listeners. And let me just jump right into it. She says, I've been an overseas missionary for almost 5 years, and the things I've been able to do as a young single missionary are outside of anything I could have dreamed up for myself. In all of this goodness and blessing, I desire to be married, serving the Lord next to my husband, wherever that might be. We all know that single women outnumber single men on the mission field, so meeting someone here is tough. At this point, I don't feel like the Lord's calling me away from my ministry for the sole purpose of finding a spouse, but in about 6 months, I'll begin a six-month furlough. When I visited the States in the past and have gone on dates, guys visibly shut down when I say I live overseas. How can I make myself available when my life has me in some weird category that doesn't quite fit into the normal box that men are comfortable with or looking for? All right, well, this is a good question, and I've often heard people ask this too as they're preparing to go to the mission field because they feel like they might be signing away marriage as a result of choosing to be a missionary. And so, you know, it's a valid concern, and I think there is a lot of fear wrapped up in that, and it can be one of those things of, you know, just, wow, does God really have this? What is this going to look like? The statistics are against me. So I want to encourage you with a couple things. The first thing is, you know, remember who God is. First of all, God is not going to punish you for being on the mission field. God is not going to step outside and say, oh, good, I'm glad I've got her, you know, locked away so that all she can do is serve me and then I'll give marriage to other people who are just living in the States. He's not like that at all. In fact, I want to give a little example of someone I met at a speaking gig one time, and it was a woman who had long been a missionary with Crew, and she had been sent to Sweden. Now, Sweden, I think there are like 4 Christians in Sweden. No, okay, sorry, Swedish listeners, we love you. But anyway, it's not a very churched country. And but she went there, and I remember her saying how she wrestled with these thoughts of like, oh my goodness, you know, and she was kind of getting older, and she's like, I'm sealing my fate as far as being single forever. Well, wouldn't you know that there was a Swedish Christian guy single, like literally they started dating and she married him. The one single Christian dude in her entire acquaintance in that country. And he didn't really even know any other Christian guys. So God brought them together. And so remember that God is not limited by odds or by statistics or anything related to that. So, you know, while he doesn't guarantee marriage to any of us, it's not a problem because, you know, God can do whatever he wants. And quite frankly, if you want to look statistically at it, I am in the United States and I'm still single. So there's a, you know, I don't know if that's comforting to you or what, but I don't think location or proximity or vocation is going to limit you or limit God in that. That said, you're still required to do some of the same things that I would ask of anyone. And that is to pray for a spouse, pray about your desire for marriage, be open to relationships and to what God may have, you know, be in that space and be willing to interact with others, especially of the opposite sex, and ask folks in your acquaintance to keep their eyes open on your behalf, whether that's here stateside for when you furlough or whether that's in your country where you're ministering. Again, God is a big God. He will accomplish what he wants to accomplish, and he will not forget you or forget your heart or your story in this. Like you said, you kicked this off by saying you have had opportunities on the mission field that you would not have had otherwise, and that is awesome. That is something to remember. God is using you greatly, and God can use you greatly if he chooses to get you married and keeps you on the mission field or brings you home or whatever. So please, please be encouraged in that. All right. Well, that is it for this week's show. As always, we do want to hear from you. This time around, though, we actually want you to go to boundless.org/survey. We have a survey there for those of you who are fun full-time listeners that ask you a lot of questions just about your experience with the show, opinions. You can give great feedback there. And quite frankly, some of your ideas might end up on future shows. So just do it. Boundless.org/survey. And in the meantime, we will see you around next week. I'm Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.